Have you ever made a decision you later wished you could take back? Perhaps you've scrolled through social media and seen someone with "no regrets" tattooed boldly across their body. Our culture celebrates this philosophy, from Edith Piaf's defiant anthem, Je ne regrette rien, to celebrities like Angelina Jolie and Bob Dylan claiming to live without regrets. But what if this popular doctrine is fundamentally wrong? What if regret isn't something to avoid, but rather a powerful force that can transform our lives for the better? Daniel Pink's groundbreaking research, including the World Regret Survey, collecting over 16,000 regrets from 105 countries, and the American Regret Project, surveying 4,489 Americans, reveals that regret is not only universal, but potentially one of our most valuable emotions, if we know how to harness it properly. Regret isn't just any negative emotion. It's uniquely human. It requires two remarkable mental abilities that set us apart from other species: time travel and storytelling. Unlike simpler emotions like fear or anger, regret demands sophisticated cognitive gymnastics. We must revisit past decisions, negate what actually happened, substitute alternatives, and project different outcomes. This cognitive superpower doesn't emerge until around age 6 in children. Studies show that individuals with brain injuries or conditions like Huntington's, Parkinson's, or schizophrenia often lose this ability. Far from being a sign of psychological strength, the absence of regret often indicates serious cognitive impairment. What distinguishes regret from similar emotions like disappointment is its combination of comparison, contrasting reality with imagined alternatives, and self-blame, recognizing personal responsibility. Despite cultural exhortations to banish regret, Pink's research reveals it's remarkably common. 82% of respondents occasionally look back wishing they'd done things differently, with 43% doing so frequently. This prevalence isn't surprising when we consider 40 years of research on the subject. Susan Shiminoff's groundbreaking 1984 study found regret was the second most commonly expressed emotion after love. Later research confirmed regret as both the most experienced and most valued negative emotion across cultures and life domains. Consider Michelle Mayo, who approached her 50th birthday with an Edith Piaf-inspired tattoo reading "Non, je ne regrette rien." While she claims to live without regrets, she acknowledges making mistakes that taught her valuable lessons. Ironically, Piaf herself died with apparent regrets, her final words suggesting accountability for life choices. As Pink observes, confronting regrets rather than avoiding them reveals their true value. Every damn thing you do in life can pay off for you. Have you ever noticed that Olympic bronze medalists often appear happier than silver medalists? This counterintuitive phenomenon reveals something profound about how our minds work. When we experience outcomes, we naturally engage in counterfactual thinking, imagining alternatives to reality. This mental process shapes not just our emotional reactions, but our entire decision-making framework. A landmark study of the 1992 Olympics showed bronze medalists appeared significantly happier, 7.1 on an agony to ecstasy scale, than silver medalists, 4.8. Why? Bronze medalists think, "At least I got a medal," downward counterfactuals, or at leasts, while silver medalists torture themselves with thoughts of almost winning gold, upward counterfactuals, or if onlys. This pattern extends beyond sports into business, relationships, and daily life decisions. Multiple studies across different Olympic Games consistently confirm this pattern. The 2016 women's cycling road race perfectly illustrated this dynamic, with bronze medalist Elisa Borghini celebrating joyfully, while silver medalist Emma Johansson, nicknamed Silver Emma after multiple second-place finishes, showed flat affect, clearly haunted by thoughts of what might have been. Similar patterns emerged in the 2012 London Olympics swimming competitions and the 2020 Tokyo Olympics gymnastics events. Logically, we should prefer comfort over pain, yet research shows if-onlys dominate our thinking by a wide margin, up to 80% of our counterfactual thoughts. This paradox exists because regret, though painful in the moment, serves an evolutionary purpose. If-only thoughts that make us feel worse today help us perform better tomorrow. Studies in cognitive psychology demonstrate that individuals who engage in upward counterfactual thinking often show improved performance in subsequent tasks. The power of counterfactual thinking extends into everyday scenarios. Job interviews where candidates think, "If only I had prepared better," lead to more thorough preparation for future opportunities. Students who reflect, "If only I had started studying earlier," tend to begin exam preparation sooner next time. Even in relationships, thoughts like, "If only I had communicated more clearly," can drive positive behavioral changes. Think about it. When was the last time you learned more from success than from failure? Regret's power comes from disrupting our conventional pain-pleasure calculus to improve future outcomes. Like Leonard Cohen's lyric, "There is a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in," regret's discomfort can illuminate better paths forward. This psychological mechanism has been essential to human evolution and continues to drive personal growth and development in modern contexts. Research in neuroscience has even begun mapping the brain regions activated during counterfactual thinking, showing increased activity in areas associated with learning and behavioral modification. This suggests our brains are literally wired to learn from these what-if scenarios, making counterfactual thinking a crucial tool for personal development and decision-making improvement. Rather than being an emotion to avoid, regret functions as a cognitive tool that helps us navigate life more effectively in three key ways. First, regret improves our decision hygiene by slowing us down and making us more thorough. When we feel the sting of regret, like accepting an offer too quickly in a negotiation, we prepare more carefully for future similar situations. Studies show regretful negotiators spend more time preparing, make better offers, and create more value for all parties. The emotional discomfort causes us to collect more information, consider wider options, and avoid cognitive biases. Second, regret boosts performance across various domains. Experimental studies using anagrams and games show that inducing regret, encouraging people to think about if-onlys, leads to improved performance, greater persistence, and enhanced problem-solving. In blackjack experiments, players expecting additional rounds willingly experienced regret to gather preparative information for better future play. Even thinking about others' regrets improves performance. Participants exposed to stories of regret scored 10% higher on LSAT questions and solved complex puzzles better. Third, regret deepens meaning in our lives. When Northwestern undergraduates reflected on attending a different university or having different friends, they found their actual experiences more meaningful. Research shows that considering what might have been creates greater meaning than directly pondering the meaning of events themselves. This effect extends beyond youth. Counterfactual reflection about pivotal life moments increases religious feeling, sense of purpose, patriotism, and organizational commitment. Abby Henderson exemplifies this through her regret about not connecting with her grandparents. This regret transformed her approach to her aging parents, prompting her to collect her father's stories through Storyworth. As Abby explains, "My life is more flavorful because of my regrets. Comparing the experience to understanding the sweetness of good pie only after tasting her grandmother's exceptional baking." The healthiest approach to regret is feeling is for thinking, using emotions as catalysts for improved behavior. Like stress, which can be either debilitating or enhancing depending on our mindset, regret becomes productive when framed as an evaluation of specific behaviors rather than character judgments. Productive regrets aggravate, then activate, creating a chain reaction where emotional discomfort prompts intellectual analysis and leads to constructive action. While regrets appear different on the surface, they often share deeper structural similarities. Pink compares this to Noam Chomsky's linguistic theory of deep structure, the idea that seemingly different languages share fundamental grammatical frameworks. After analyzing thousands of regrets from his surveys, Pink identifies four fundamental categories that represent the deep structure of human regret, transcending domains like family, education, or career. Foundation regrets arise from failures to be responsible or prudent, undermining life's basic stability through poor choices in education, finances, or health. They stem from two cognitive biases: temporal discounting, overvaluing immediate rewards while undervaluing future benefits, and failure to understand compounding effects. People describe foundation regrets using language of excess, too much drinking, spending, and insufficiency, too little studying, saving. The consequences arrive gradually and then suddenly, as Hemingway wrote. Small, poor decisions compound over time until their cumulative impact becomes devastating and often irreversible. Boldness regrets stem from chances not taken, whether in education, work, or relationships, as we're more likely to regret inaction than action. Research consistently shows people regret inactions more than actions, especially over the long term. When we act, we know what happened. When we don't, we can only speculate, which keeps regrets alive longer. In the American Regret Project, inaction regrets outnumbered action regrets by nearly 2-to-1. These findings appear across cultures, including less individualistic ones like China, Japan, and Russia. At the heart of all boldness regrets is thwarted growth, the failure to become the person one could have been. Moral regrets occur when we compromise our principles, betraying our desire to be good people. While everyone generally agrees on what constitutes a strong foundation or boldness, morality is more complex and varies across individuals and cultures. Moral regrets typically involve actions rather than inactions, unlike boldness regrets. They cluster around five moral foundations: harm, especially bullying; cheating, particularly infidelity; disloyalty, failing group obligations; subversion, dishonoring authority; and desecration, violating what's sacred. Despite being the smallest category numerically, moral regrets reveal our deep-seated desire to be good. Connection regrets, the largest category, arise when relationships have fractured or remain incomplete. These regrets follow a common plot line: a relationship that was once intact, or should have been, no longer is. They come in two forms: closed-door regrets, where opportunity is gone, and open-door regrets, where reconnection remains possible, but requires effort. Connection regrets occur in just two patterns: rifts, dramatic breaks following catalyzing incidents, and drifts, relationships that fade away through inattention. People often avoid reconnecting because they fear it will be creepy or uncomfortable, but research shows we consistently overestimate how awkward such reconnections will be and underestimate how positively others will respond. Regret functions as a photographic negative of the good life, revealing what we value most by showing what we wish we hadn't missed. The four core regrets collectively illuminate a path toward positive living through establishing a solid foundation, embracing boldness, maintaining basic morality, and nurturing meaningful connections. Like shadows that define the shape of light, our regrets outline the contours of a well-lived life. According to Torrey Higgins' influential theory of motivation, we navigate life through three distinct selves: our actual self, who we currently are; our ideal self, who we aspire to become; and our ought self, who we feel obligated to be. Groundbreaking research by Davidi and Gilovich revealed a striking pattern. People regret failures to live up to their ideal selves significantly more than failures to meet their ought selves, with coulda regrets outnumbering shoulda regrets by approximately 3-to-1. This finding suggests that unrealized dreams haunt us more persistently than unfulfilled duties. This asymmetry occurs because discrepancies between our actual and ought selves trigger immediate anxiety and agitation, prompting corrective action. In contrast, gaps between our actual and ideal selves produce a deeper, more persistent dejection that often leads to inaction. Failed opportunities to become our ideal selves create lasting regrets that accumulate over time, while unfulfilled obligations tend to drive immediate behavioral changes. All four core regrets involve this interplay between opportunity and obligation, with missed opportunities generally casting longer shadows. Demographic patterns in regret provide compelling evidence of opportunity's central role. College graduates, for instance, report more career regrets than non-graduates, precisely because their education opened more doors, each unopened door becoming a potential source of regret. Similarly, higher-income individuals experience more career regrets but fewer financial regrets, reflecting their broader range of professional choices. Age introduces another fascinating dimension. As people grow older, inaction regrets become increasingly dominant. By age 50, regrets about paths not taken occur twice as frequently as regrets about actions taken, highlighting how unexplored opportunities loom larger in life's rearview mirror. The implications for living well emerge with crystal clarity. A life of obligation and no opportunity is crimped and constrained, leaving us feeling trapped by duty. A life of opportunity and no obligation is hollow and purposeless, lacking moral foundation. A life that successfully fuses opportunity and obligation achieves true fulfillment. This balance between seizing possibilities while honoring commitments forms the cornerstone of a life well lived. The key lies not in eliminating regret entirely, but in using it as a compass to navigate between the twin poles of personal growth and moral responsibility. When facing regrets, particularly those of inaction, we need a systematic approach to convert them into fuel for progress. This requires a three-step process. Step 1. Self-disclosure. Research shows that writing or talking about negative experiences like regret for just 15 minutes daily substantially increases overall life satisfaction and improves physical and mental well-being. Language forces us to organize abstract emotions into concrete linguistic units, moving experiences from the emotional realm into the cognitive one. While we worry others will judge us for revealing failures, evidence shows self-disclosure actually builds affinity rather than triggering judgment. Even writing privately about emotional difficulties brings powerful benefits. Fewer physician visits, improved mood, strengthened immune function, better academic performance, and faster job acquisition. Step 2. Self-compassion. After disclosing your regret, you face a choice about how to respond. With self-criticism or self-esteem. Surprisingly, neither approach is optimal. Self-criticism, despite its appearance of toughness and ambition, typically leads to rumination rather than productive action. Self-esteem, while offering affirmation, can foster narcissism and diminish empathy. The most effective approach is self-compassion, extending to ourselves the same warmth and understanding we'd offer another person in the same situation. Self-compassion normalizes negative experiences by recognizing imperfection as part of shared humanity, thereby neutralizing their power. Research shows self-compassion correlates with increased optimism, happiness, curiosity, wisdom, emotional intelligence, mental toughness, and deeper social connections, while reducing depression, anxiety, and stress. In studies of regret specifically, people who addressed their regrets with self-compassion were more likely to change their behavior than those using self-esteem. Step 3. Self-distancing. Rather than immersing ourselves in negative emotions, we can zoom out and view our situation as detached observers. This approach changes our role from scuba diver to oceanographer, from swimming in regret to examining it from above. Self-distancing can be achieved in three ways: through space, using the fly-on-the-wall technique to view your regret as a neutral observer would; through time, imagining how you'll feel about the regret in 10 years; and through language, using third-person pronouns or your own name when addressing yourself. These techniques help us recast threats as challenges, strengthen thinking, enhance problem solving, deepen wisdom, and even reduce physical stress responses. The process is remarkably effective. Neuroimaging studies show self-distancing through language can take effect within 1 second. In 1888, Alfred Nobel had the unusual experience of reading his own obituary in a newspaper due to a case of mistaken identity. What disturbed him most was the headline that summarized his legacy, "The Merchant of Death is Dead." This confrontation with how history might remember him proved transformative. 8 years later, when Nobel actually died, his will revealed he had established the Nobel Prizes for those who conferred the greatest benefit on mankind. By glimpsing a preview of his future and regretting what he saw, Nobel changed his behavior to avoid that regret. Anticipating regret can powerfully influence our behavior. Duke University Libraries demonstrated this with a simple experiment. When students were automatically entered in a raffle but would forfeit their prize if selected without completing a survey, response rates doubled compared to a traditional raffle. This regret lottery exploits how we evaluate decisions differently when we can envision future regret. Just as losses loom larger than gains, regret looms larger than rejoicing. This anticipatory mechanism slows our thinking and helps overcome regrets of inaction. Studies show anticipated regret motivates healthier behaviors, from exercise and vaccination to cancer screenings and safe driving. Jeff Bezos exemplifies this approach with his regret minimization framework, projecting himself to age 80 and asking what he might regret not trying, which led him to leave his banking job to start Amazon. Despite its benefits, anticipated regret has significant drawbacks. Research shows we're remarkably poor at predicting our emotional reactions, particularly regret. We overestimate negativity and underestimate our coping abilities, leading us to buy unnecessary emotional insurance. Anticipating regret clouds judgment. Consumers choose expensive brands over identical cheaper options when concerned about future regret. Most people refuse to trade lottery tickets even when offered financial incentives, fearing potential regret if they trade away a winner. Rather than constantly trying to minimize regret, which becomes unhealthy maximizing, we should optimize it. The regret optimization framework combines anticipated regret science with the deep structure of regret through 4 principles. 1. Anticipating regrets often leads to better decisions. 2. We frequently overestimate future regrets. 3. Maximizing on regret minimization worsens outcomes. And 4. The 4 core regrets reveal fundamental human needs. We should anticipate regrets in these 4 core categories, but satisfy on decisions outside them. Pink explores the fascinating contradiction in American beliefs about free will and fate, revealing a complex tapestry of human thought. When surveyed, 82% of Americans believe people have free will and maintain control over their decisions, yet simultaneously, 78% also believe most things happen for a reason. This apparent paradox divides people into distinct groups. Only 5% were nihilists who rejected both propositions entirely, 10% were individualists who believed exclusively in free will, and 10% were fatalists who believed solely in fate. The remaining 75%, whom Pink calls simply the humans, hold both seemingly contradictory beliefs simultaneously, demonstrating our capacity to embrace complexity in how we view life's unfolding. Regret, at its core, is powered by storytelling, a remarkable ability to imagine alternate timelines and craft better endings. We function as both authors and actors in our life stories, living at the intersection of free will and circumstance. This duality allows us to both shape our narrative and be shaped by forces beyond our control. Psychologist Dan McAdams identifies 2 fundamental narrative patterns that emerge in how people process their experiences: contamination sequences, where good situations turn bad, and redemption sequences, where negative experiences transform into positive outcomes. Research consistently shows that people who construct redemption narratives tend to be more satisfied with their lives, more accomplished in their pursuits, and find greater meaning in their experiences. These individuals often use their regrets as stepping stones rather than stumbling blocks. The redemptive quality of regret is powerfully exemplified by Cheryl Johnson's story, who reconnected with her friend Jen after a 25-year separation. When Cheryl expressed deep regret over the lost years of friendship, Jen's simple yet profound response, "But we still have a lot of years left," demonstrates how regret can be transformed into future possibility. This story illustrates how regret can serve as a catalyst for positive change rather than a source of paralysis. Pink transparently shares his own catalog of regrets, including not being kinder in his younger years, moments of dishonesty that still haunt him, educational and professional choices he wishes he'd made differently, insufficient investment in relationships, and not taking enough risks when opportunities presented themselves. Rather than letting these regrets consume him, he actively uses them as guideposts to inform and improve his current actions and future decisions. His conclusion elegantly captures the essence of the book's message about regret's transformative potential. Regret makes me human. Regret makes me better. Regret gives me hope. This trinity of statements encapsulates how regret, when properly understood and utilized, serves not as a burden but a powerful tool for personal growth, self-improvement, and maintaining optimism about future possibilities. The ability to feel regret and transform it into positive action may be one of humanity's most valuable psychological capabilities. When we look at regret through the lens of the four core categories, clear life lessons emerge. Foundation regrets teach us to be responsible and prudent, to build stable platforms through education, financial security, and physical health. As Jason Drent, who now mentors younger employees after his own financial regrets, advises, "Think ahead, do the work, start now." Boldness regrets reveal our need for growth and expansion. They teach us to speak up, take chances, and step out of our comfort zones. The pain of boldness regrets is the pain of what if, a question that can haunt us for decades, as Bruce discovered after letting a potential romance slip away during a train journey 40 years ago. Moral regrets, though the smallest category numerically, often ache the most and last the longest. They teach us to do the right thing, to avoid harm, maintain integrity, honor commitments, and respect what we hold sacred. Steve Robinson, who regretted bullying others as a teen, channeled his remorse into becoming a pediatric nurse and counselor to help others feel safe. Connection regrets, the largest category, teach us to prioritize relationships. The lesson of closed doors is to do better next time. The lesson of open doors is to do something now. As Cheryl Johnson reflected about her relationship with Jen, "You're almost always better off to err on the side of showing up. And if it's awkward, then it's awkward, and you'll live. It'll be fine. But if you don't show up, it's lost forever." Understanding what we truly regret reveals what we truly value, pointing the way to a life well lived. One built on a solid foundation, enriched by boldness, guided by morality, and deepened through connection. When we embrace regret rather than denying it, we transform what might have been our greatest source of pain into our most powerful teacher.